Welcome to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford. Today, we're going to plop ourselves down right here in lovely, lively Winston-Salem for a while and enjoy a little Triad Music History 101. First, we'll take a look at Salem's 19th century Moravian community in the waning days of the Civil War. The 26th Regiment will bring music to our ears, and the new Winston-Salem Museum puts it in perfect historical context. Then, Salem Band is alive and well since its founding 243 years ago, and music director Eileen Young is keeping it real for us in 2014. We'll continue full circle with more great music, this time an old-timey string band that really swings. Unbroken Circle is back in concert raising money for yet another worthy cause. We'll wrap things up today with a quick trip to the heart of downtown Winston-Salem and the art house cinema that's doing its part to keep things rocking on 4th Street. Aperture Cinema's Lauren Desai updates us on new screenings, Oscar picks, and more next after this news. This is Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford, and we're keeping it close to home today with an exploration of some of our musical roots right here in the Triad. First, we're off to the battlefield. Now the battle din is o'er. Was appropriately enough the last tune played for General Robert E. Lee. It was also the last music played by the 26th Regiment North Carolina Troops, made up of Moravian musicians from Salem. The new Winston Museum, in collaboration with the Moravian Music Foundation, will be hosting performances of this historic music along with the touching When the Swallows Homeward Fly, performed for Lee on the evening of the surrender at Appomattox, Virginia, and others. The new Winston Museum, now in its second year of operation, is Winston-Salem's hottest new museum, showcasing and preserving the many fascinating stories of this region from 1849 to present, with oral histories, research, education, and collaboration. The War at Home, Tuesday, February 18th, is a case in point. The lecture recital will include live performances of these powerful wartime songs with tenor Glenn Siebert, pianist and Moravian Music Foundation director Dr. Nola Reed Knaus, and commentary by research advisor Philip Dunnigan. Nola and Philip recently stopped by along with new Winston Museum Director of Education and Programming, Chris Jordan. Talk about what your all's programming, how it kind of sets itself apart from others, and I guess specifically with regard to this program, The War at Home, and the local perspective it brings.
The new Winston Museum is a relatively new museum, we're still very small, but what we do is a little different than any other local institution. We kind of pick up where Old Salem leaves off in the story of the Winston-Salem Forsyth County community. But I think as far as the War at Home, exploring Winston-Salem during the Civil War, we look at the Civil War in a bit of a different way. Going into it, we knew that this was the sesquicentennial of the Civil War. We're in the 150th anniversary years, and we knew that we wanted to do something with that, but there was very little information about what was going on here in Winston-Salem during the war. So I decided to change perspectives a little bit and not look at the war from the military aspect and look at it from what was going on in everyday people's lives. And in that, we found a very fascinating story of innovation, of industry, of division within the community, and significance of culture and music that we all know has been here, especially in the Moravian tradition, for a long time, but how it really played a huge part during that time period.
From your research, though, Chris, what sorts of stories within stories have you come up with? Give me an example of something that really turned your ear, fascinated you.
Well, I think with the story of the Civil War, specifically in Winston and Salem, I was fascinated to learn about how divided the community was, about how Forsyth County was largely against secession from the beginning. That's not just in Salem. We might imagine that Moravians were largely pacifist and had a large connection to Pennsylvania, so there would be an understandable reticence against secession. But even in Winston and the rest of Forsyth County, there was a hesitance to secede. There was reluctance to abandon the Constitution. A lot of that lasts throughout the war. There, we see a lot of examples of secret societies, of peace meetings, of anti-Confederate activity locally. And at the same time, you have the people on the exact opposite side. And so we see this very dualistic existence in Winston-Salem.
Interesting. What sentiments were playing out there, and what was part of the Moravian culture at that time that enabled that discussion, Nola?
The Moravians, like the rest of the community, were divided. They had a background of pacifism, of not participating in wars, that had stood them in good stead for centuries, in fact. At the conclusion of the Revolutionary War, for instance, the Moravians presented what we believe is the first celebration of July 4th in the country's history here in Salem in 1783. But that was not a celebration of, oh, thank God we won. It was a, thank God now there's peace and we can get back to living our lives.
How about that? How was that message lost over the years?
The Moravians didn't make a whole lot of big deal out of it. I mean, we did make a big deal out of the celebration, yes, but we've not been very good at telling our own story over the years. Tooting our own horn is not something the Moravians do very well.
Well, I'm sorry to say that tradition continues to this
day
right. in the triad.
It's our job at the Moravian Music Foundation to try to toot our own horn and to bring that history out and interpret it for people to see just what a wonderful treasure the Moravians have left to us for today.
In this period of history, could you give me another example of either a sentiment or a movement or just a dynamic, culturally speaking, within the Moravian community that I wouldn't be aware of?
We have the letters of Eddie Peterson, who was a member of the 26th North Carolina Regimental Band, writing back to his sister before Gettysburg, saying, please continue to pray and hope for peace, for the cause of the South is already lost. And then we have the letters from Dr. Schaffner writing back to Carrie, his fiancée, about everything was going to be fine and Gettysburg was a great victory for us. And we retired in good order.
Wow. Do I attribute that to just there was no texting back then or the lines of communication?
Probably. And the desire, the will to believe what you want to believe.
I imagine that gets played out in the art of the time as well, in the music and the pieces, but there's a lot there.
There really is. And so much of the historical research into the Moravians in this area has focused on the earlier years when it was a more or less separate, independent community that didn't stay isolated from the rest of the surroundings. I mean, the Moravians, in their music, they knew what was going on in the world around them, and they got copies of the latest hits all over from Europe not too long after they were published and were playing and singing them here. So they didn't stay insular and isolated from the culture around them, but they were maintaining their own culture in the midst of early America. So that's been where most of the historical research has focused, because it's just intriguing and different.
Of course, we know that the Moravian community, at least early on, were bringing back the works of Papa Haydn with them and their kits. But moving into the Civil War era, Philip, what were some of the musical influences bantered about then? I mean, Johannes Brahms, Dvorak, who were the composers of the day that were driving some of these songs in the pop realm?
They collected music for use in the home, and it was mostly the women had studied at the Salem Academy, so they were very fine keyboardists. They had these collections, and they also had bands. And starting around 1830, their pacifism was no longer recognized, and so they had to do something military. So they decided to put together a company band, because every community had to have a militia company. First of all, just a regular wind band of oboes and clarinets and serpents and things. And then when the brass instruments became chromatic, they started bands everywhere in all the communities. And they sent three bands to the Civil War. 33rd Regiment Band, the 1st North Carolina Sharpshooters, and the 26th Regiment Band were all from this area, from Wachovia.
What set the 26th Regiment Band apart? Why focus on that particular group?
Because that's the only collection of complete sets of parts that we have from the war.
That's
in
right.
The South.
They were meticulous record keepers in general.
Well, they didn't throw anything away if they could help it. These books have been recorded. The music in there has been recorded by the foundation and is available. The band music, the 26th Regiment, they had the common repertoire with the 33rd and the 1st Battalion and some of the other bands.
Who were the tunesmiths of the day? What were some of their big influences at that time?
Their big influences were very often European composers, German composers who were translated into English, and English composers and American composers of songs.
Okay.
And their taste was very good.
Yes, so that the repertoire of the regimental bands is marches and things that you'd expect of a military band. But it's also arrangements of arias from operas and the like. Imagine the Anvil Chorus as a quick step. Moravian chorales are in there, the things that they would have played back at home. Ballads, popular songs of all sorts, sentimental things. It's a real mixed bag of music.
Oh, wow.
I think it's important to note that the 26th Regimental Band particularly became very well known regionally during the war because they were putting on concerts in a lot of the towns that they would be stationed in. There'd be concerts to raise money for wounded troops and that kind of thing. So they would be playing not these marches that they'd be playing for their regimental duties, but popular songs at the time. And they became very, very widely popular, raised a lot of money, and really got a following. People would come out to see them practice. They became very popular because of that.
Well, Chris, who were these people playing in the bands at that time? I know today's Salem band still exists, and it's a community band. Anyone can perform. But back then, and what were they raising money for, that sort of thing?
Well, I would imagine these are the same types of people that are playing today. These are everyday people. They are the sons of craftsmen. They're potters and coopers and carpenters, and they join the band because either they are great musicians, all of them anyway, or because they know that they're going to end up getting conscripted into the army, especially later in the war. So they decide, I don't want to fight, or I can be of better service by playing in the band.
I like the all-encompassing nature of this presentation at the museum because you've got, there'll be lectures going on as well as the visual art and of course, the music that sets it all up and Lorena in a tune I want to get to and the significance of this tune. Could you give us a little background there, Philip?
Lorena was written by a man who was disappointed in love, who was a Universalist minister. He fell in love. He couldn't marry the girl because he was only a Universalist minister. And she married somebody who became the head of the Supreme Court of the state of Ohio. But he wrote the song, and it became a huge hit. He wrote it in 1853. Everybody had it. And we have a copy of it, and the vocal music and also the band arrangement. That's what we're going to be performing.
You all are hosting another performance, this of When the Swallows Homeward Fly, another story behind this tune.
This was the last music that was played at the surrender for Robert E. Lee by the 4th Regimental Band, North Carolina Troops. And the song is a song of parting. It's a very sad song. It's a German song translated into English. And there was a young officer who witnessed it, whose name was Devereaux. When he heard the performance, he wrote home to his sister, an older sister, and she wrote a poem to go with the music. When the music was played for Lee, he is reputed to have come out with tears in his eyes. And he said, I thank you. I can say no more.
Wow.
The lyrics of the songs are very powerful. We had the lyrics because it's in the document that Devereaux sent to his sister. And we have the music for the song by Franz Zopt, and Nola put them together in an addition so that it could be performed, and that's what we're going to be performing.
Wonderful, and I can think of few in this area more apt for this pairing than tenor Glenn Siebert, and musician and also music scholar and director of the Magnolia Baroque Festival as well. Talk about what makes this tune so great from either of your all's perspective. What thematically or melodically, what grabs you?
Franz Opt was a great song composer in Germany. You know, back in the days when Schubert was writing songs. And there's Carl Harrelson was a poet who did a series of poems, love poems, and this is one of them. And it was very popular in German. It was popular in German with the Moravians, and it was popular in the English translation with the Moravians, and it was popular with everybody in the Confederacy. Nobody would mistake it for anything else.
Gosh. World music in the 1800s, our first glimpse. Great. Pianist and Moravian Music Foundation Director Dr. Nola Reed Knaus, Research Advisor Philip Dunnigan, and New Winston Museum Director of Education and Programming Chris Jordan. The lecture recital, The War at Home, is Tuesday, February 18th at noon in the New Winston Museum, 713 South Marshall Street in Winston-Salem. You'll find links to more information at wfdd.org and click on Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford, and we've got more great Moravian-inspired music for you after this short break. Clarinetist, educator, and Salem band director Eileen Young is smiling to beat the band next when Triad Arts Weekend continues. Welcome back to Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford, and it's always great to have you along with me as we explore the amazing bounty that is the Triad Arts scene. So bountiful is it that we could spend an entire show on Greensboro, High Point, or Winston-Salem, and today we're going to do just that. It's hats off to Winston and its rich musical history today, and as Salem band director Eileen Young will have you know, we've got Moravians to thank for that too. Salem Band began performing way back in 1771, making it one of the oldest community bands in the country. These days, you can hear the ensemble perform free public concerts 7 times a year. 5 of them are outdoors in the beautiful shaded confines of Salem Square in Old Salem. The Salem Band Winter Concert is one of 2 indoor performances. It'll be held next Tuesday, February 4th, in Brendel Recital Hall on the campus of Wake Forest University. Since May of 2011, Salem Band has been led by music director, Winston-Salem Symphony bass clarinetist, and Wake Forest University saxophone, woodwind ensembles, and clarinet instructor, Eileen Young. Could you remind listeners that, like, the instrumental makeup of these sorts of chamber groups, just beginning with the woodwind quintet, for example?
Well, the woodwind quintet is a centuries-old standard: flute, oboe, clarinet, bassoon, and horn. Even though horn's not a woodwind instrument, blends very well with the woodwinds.
Okay, and then the quartet, is that minus the French horn? What is that group?
Yes, we had a quartet, a woodwind quartet selection we played on a recital that was the quartet without the horn, so okay. It's just woodwinds.
And then what was the trio group? What was that made up of?
That trio, we've had several trios going. Kathy Levy, who's the flute instructor at Wake Forest, and I have had several trios with different pianists on the staff there.
Okay.
And we've done flute and saxophone, piano, flute and clarinet, piano.
And tell me about the Bolton Woodwind Quintet and your residency at Artspace.
The Bolton Quintet is, I think, the best kept secret in Winston-Salem as far as music education. We began in 1995, and myself and Bob Campbell, who is the horn player and also on the faculty at Wake Forest, are founding members of the quintet, and we just have a blast teaching academics through music with the quintet. And ArtSpace is, of course, a great place to be for that because of what they have going on with their programming, and they're always interested in having unique musical experiences for the children. But it's not just music, it's also academics. And I wish we could get other schools on board with how much we feel it really helps the students with not only addressing various learning styles, but also giving them different ways of thinking through academics.
Could you give me an example of how the Woodwind Quintet goes about maybe enlightening students on something maybe even completely non-musical?
Well, in addition to, of course, rhythm programs that address some basic math and arithmetic issues, and we also do an adjectives lesson, we're doing a lot of, I think probably the most important thing we do is developing listening skills with the students. And we address a lot of that, especially early on in the curriculum, and we can really see a difference between how their attention is and their listening from the first lesson to the last in the residency.
Well, you're pushing on an open door with me. I still remember it was a woodwind quintet. They did a Peter and the Wolf version of that, the woodwind quintet version at our elementary school when I was a kid, and I was just, I was dumbfounded. It was right up in our classroom. There are these great musicians, and I was hooked.
Yeah, we also perform that woodwind quintet, Peter and the Wolf, and the kids just eat it up. They really love it.
Now, one last ensemble I got to let listeners know about, because the clarinet is such an interesting instrument, just in the numbers of various clarinets. You run the Wake Forest University Clarinet Choir. How many clarinets, which instruments are involved? And could you kind of break down the clarinet family for listeners?
Oh, sure. And that's one of the fascinating things about clarinet choir, especially with our audiences. The clarinet choir has been anywhere from 8 to 21 players, depending on who's interested. But pretty steadily in the past several years, we've utilized several of the regular B-flat clarinets. We also have the higher-pitched E-flat clarinet, which takes a special kind of player to appreciate that.
And for listeners, the E-flat clarinet's about half the length of a regular clarinet, I guess.
Yes, it looks like a baby clarinet.
Plays way up in the stratosphere.
It really is, and it's tough to... It seems like it would be cute to play it, but it's not. It's pretty tough to wrangle that thing.
Yeah, tough to get that one in tune. And then some larger instruments as well.
Yep, we have the alto clarinet, bass clarinet, contra-alto clarinet, and contrabass clarinet.
And the contrabass, about as big as I am, it comes in at what, about 5-6 feet, something like that?
Yes, and our student, and she's an alumni now, but she's still playing this year, and she's a tall gal, and she still has to sit on a stool to play it. It's so huge.
I remember the read on that thing is like a popsicle stick. Yeah. I mean, my whole head's vibrating. So with that background, I mean, Eileen, you were named music director after a long search, music director of the Salem Band in May of 2011. Such a rich history with that group. Can you tell me about the ensemble and what it's like carrying on that tradition in 2014?
Well, I was approached with the idea of applying for the position, and I actually had no intention of applying. But when I thought about it and was encouraged to do so, one of the things that really interested me about this band in particular was the historic aspect of it. That really piqued my interest, and I did go ahead and apply. And the group itself is known to be the oldest continuous mixed wind ensemble in the country.
How about that?
And I know that sounds like a convoluted statement, but I think most of us in Winston-Salem are very familiar with the Moravians and their impeccable record keeping, and they do have receipts from trombones that were brought to the Salem area from up north in 1770.
Wow.
Yes, the first concert was January 1771.
Unbelievable.
I know.
Well, just from a personal level, Eileen, what's it like leading that group now in 2014? What sorts of thoughts go through your mind?
Well, we're trying to balance, of course, more popular literature and engage players from various aspects of the community and various levels of ability, and still stay true to the Moravian tradition and the history of the band. And we're starting to be able to stay on track with that. But first and foremost, this band is a community organization. So we're always thinking about how we can serve the community, our audience, and the larger community and other musical ensembles here in the city. And we're happy to be part of City of the Arts, and I think that's part of what makes this organization still viable today.
Talk about some of the community aspect of what you do with the Salem Band.
Well, in our mission statement, the first thing on there is to provide entertaining concert band music free of charge to the community we serve. So we will always present free concerts, and that means a lot of fundraising tactics for us, but we're also starting to get a grasp on that as well. Yeah. And our audiences have traditionally been primarily older folks, a lot of folks in the Moravian Church, Salem Town retirement community, and we're really trying to expand our audience so that more people know about just what the background is in the history of this band and also how much it's improved in the past few years.
What sorts of feedback do you get from the audience?
Actually, our audiences have grown a lot. Typically, we have around 300. Our patriotic concert is very well attended, and we typically have over 400. All of our summer concerts are outdoors in Salem Square, and that's just a beautiful venue for your typical summer concert band like you were talking about. It's unusual in Winston-Salem that we have, besides Salem Band, two other community bands and a symphonic wind band, and I think that partly comes from the Pennsylvania Moravian settlement. I grew up in Lancaster County, Pennsylvania, and just in that county alone, there were several really fine community bands, one of which I played in. And when I was approached about applying for this job, that was when I started thinking about the great opportunities and experiences I had in community band that made it more attractive to me, too.
It's a great tradition. And you're expanding it, too, right? You've got swing bands, other like spinoffs from the Salem Band you've got going?
Yes. When I took the job, I had every intention of trying to start a swing band. Like I said, our older audiences are really attracted to that music. And my father's a World War II veteran, so I grew up listening to a lot of that kind of music, too, and really enjoy it. So we started the swing band, and it's really taken off, especially recently. Our first summer concert for 2014 will actually feature half regular Salem band and half swing band. We plan to have dancers from Piedmont Swing Dance Society join us, and they've been with us before, and the audience really likes that.
Great.
Aspect of it.
And who's in the sax quartet?
The sax quartet is three from our saxophone section, and our principal clarinet is also a saxophonist. And they've gotten several gigs recently, especially with their holiday program. They played pre-concert holiday music on our Christmas concert, but they also played at a party and played at Reagan High School before their holiday concert. So word is getting out about them, too, and it's a really fine saxophone quartet.
Yeah, I should point out that anytime you hear a quartet or a choir made up of all the same instruments, it's really a neat sound. The clarinet choir, for example, can sometimes sound like a massive organ. You know, there's just the sameness of sound. And similarly with the sax quartet, when it's good, it's a really otherworldly experience.
It is. And it's not, I think people don't really completely understand the saxophone quartet. Of course, there's always the ubiquitous attitude about the saxophone with some folks to begin with, but my student saxophone quartet at Wake Forest has in the past rehearsed on the third floor and had faculty walk by and wonder where the organ sound was coming from. And it is saxophone quartet in particular. It is, I think, my favorite chamber ensemble because of what you described, the sound that it can get. It's unbelievably rich and colorful, even for just having four saxophones in it.
It's just as beautiful with 21st century works as with music of the Renaissance. I mean, it's amazing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I do have to tell a sax joke, though. You know the difference between a tenor sax and a lawnmower?
You can tune a lawnmower?
There you go. Okay.
We've heard them all.
All right, good. Thank you. speaking of concerts, you're talking about the gigs for the Saxophone Quartet, Salem Band Winter Concert coming up February 4th at 7:30. It's a free concert, as always, with Salem Band in Brendel Recital Hall in the Skills Fine Arts Center on the Wake campus. And how do you put together programs? And so much music out there, so much rich literature. What sorts of considerations do you have?
I have kind of restructured the concert schedule. I felt like when I started, the band was on an almost impossible schedule of rehearsing from January through May and then presenting six or seven summer concerts every 2 weeks from June through August.
Wow.
And it was very taxing on everybody. And so I've restructured it to spread things out a little bit. The band had always done a holiday concert in December, so we kept that tradition and we've reduced our summer concerts to four. And we experimented with a Fall Fest concert this past October, and it was lovely to have a concert on a Sunday afternoon in Salem Square in early October. So
I
think we're going to keep that tradition too, and we hope to turn that into a fundraiser of sorts.
Should point out for listeners who've never been to Salem Square, that is just a gorgeous setting with the shade trees and open expanse. So you really feel like you're being transported in time.
Absolutely, and the surrounding buildings from the college and Old Salem, and we've engaged a hot dog and lemonade cart, and that was really successful. It just makes it seem like an old traditional summer evening concert.
So, pairing back the season, not concerts every couple of weeks, but challenging music. And at the beginning with America, a really neat arrangement and lots of great percussion and rhythmic things going on.
Yes, and that was a challenge for us at that time. We spent a lot of time on that piece, but it was very relevant to the program at Wake Forest. And we ended up using it on our patriotic concert.
In the Bleak Midwinter, another very nice arrangement, one that, not surprisingly, features the clarinet.
Yes, and the clarinetist on that recording is Jacob Eichhorn, who is a music major on clarinet at Wake Forest, a student of mine, who studied with me in high school as well. And he took a year off between graduating from Wake, and he's now in graduate school in Colorado. And he was the principal clarinetist in the band, and I was thrilled to have him there. And he brought a lot to the section and did a great job on that extensive solo on that work.
Can be involved in the Salem Band?
Well, our bylaws stipulate that for the enjoyment of everyone involved, at this point our players need to be at least an intermediate level, preferably intermediate to advanced. And at this point, one of the things I was charged with doing when I took the job was expanding the membership and also diversifying our membership a little bit. And I think that's happened actually quicker than I expected. We have probably half a dozen players with music degrees from School of the Arts, UNCG, And even just that many players have brought a much higher level and set a good example of playing for the others. Many of our brass players are from the Moravian band tradition, but many of them are also exceptional players, and the overall sound of the band has improved so much, and I've been really pleased with it. When I started, there were 40, 45 members, and now we're at 60 members. And other than the occasional instrument that may come in or out with the player, we pretty much have a full instrumentation.
That's exciting. What's been the most rewarding part for you personally, Eileen?
Well, I think just getting to know all these different people and bringing people together, which I was glad that the band wanted to not only expand the number, but the diversity of the membership. And that's really brought together older and younger people and musically more educated people. We have some former Wake Forest faculty members in there, some alumni, and like I said, School of the Arts grads, and people from all over. And bringing them, all these different people together to work towards one goal has been really gratifying for me as the director.
So I understand this particular concert coming up, the winter concert for Salem Band, is a little more, would you describe it as being more formal?
Yes, in the sense that it's different from our summer concerts where we will often incorporate a fair amount of swing or jazz, some popular selections, marches. There's one march on this program, but the winter concert was intended to kind of match the performance space, and we're playing some more original band pieces. One of our selections by Persichetti is an original composition, and the Shostakovich Festive Overture, which has been a big challenge for the band, but they are up to it, and we're excited to perform it indoors.
That's a fast one.
It is. And I give them a break on the tempo, they're being real good sports about it. That's one of my very favorite pieces. So.
Oh, it's a great one. We got to end with that one. Okay, but before, I don't have to wear a tuxedo, do I?
Oh, no. This dress is informal.
Great.
And as always, free concert.
Nice. Winston-Salem Symphony bass clarinetist and Wake Forest University instructor Eileen Young has conducted Salem Band since her appointment in 2011. Salem Band Winter Concert is Tuesday, February 4th at 7:30 in Brendel Recital Hall on the Wake campus. As with all Salem Band performances, this concert is free and open to the public. You'll find links to more information at wfdd.org and click on Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford, and we're going to take another oh-so-short breather, give you a chance to get up, stretch your legs, before settling in for some outstanding bluegrass and old-timey string band music with Unbroken Circle, and a film screening preview with Aperture Cinema's Lauren Desai that you don't want to miss next when Triad Arts Weekend continues. This is Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford, and Aperture Cinema owner Lauren Desai will be with us just about 5 minutes from now with some cool new developments at her now three-screened art house cinema. The Winston-Salem native is doing her darndest to bring back the intimate movie-going experience of yesteryear to her hometown, but with a modern twist, and she's here to fill us in. But first, it's time for more music with Carolina Roots. The Unbroken Circle is Wake Forest University's multi-generational string band. It's a community of musicians who gather together regularly to share in the fellowship of music making, song sharing, storytelling, and poetry reading. They also come together for worthy causes, and on Saturday night, February 1st at 7 o'clock, they'll offer a free concert at Kulinich Auditorium in the Byram Welcome Center on the Wake campus in Winston-Salem. Donations will be collected there for the Shalom Project, a Winston-Salem charity that feeds the hungry, provides clothing to those in need, and tutors at-risk children. They also care for the sick, running one of the largest free medical clinics in the city. The fundraiser will be an intimate evening of live acoustic old-time music and bluegrass with poetry readings by Mr. Wake Forest Ed Wilson. Wake Forest University Dean of Admissions Martha Allman is a member of the Unbroken Circle. She's a native of Mitchell County, North Carolina, in the Appalachian Mountains.
We decided to get together one night and just play, and just had a magical evening. We had potluck dinner and played music together, and We found other friends. We found Wake Forest students who were also interested in Appalachian music, mountain music, bluegrass music, and they began showing interest. And so it grew into a group that meets once a month, and we have potluck dinner and play music, sometimes until very late in the night. And it's a fluid group. We have Wake Forest students, administrators, faculty. Students graduate and move on. New ones come in. Members of the group bring friends. And sometimes we have 40 people. Sometimes we have 15. It just varies from month to month.
Wow, that's a good group. And I put the cart ahead of the horse. Are you a fiddler? What's your instrument?
No, I play the auto harp. I'm the one probably with the least musical talent in the group. So it's left to me to organize the group. But I do play the auto harp. My youngest daughter is 16 and she plays every instrument. And so she is the youngest member of the band. We have had other small children who have come, seven-year-olds with their tiny little violins and some babies that have to be put to bed on the floor when we play at night, just like in the olden days. And then we have grandparents and Ed Wilson. So it's certainly multi-generational.
Wonderful. What's the best part of the Unbroken Circle for you?
It's absolutely the community and the sharing. This is the way people have entertained themselves for centuries, for generations, to sit around a circle and share songs and enjoy the music and teach each other music. You know, the younger people play Avett Brothers and Mumford and Sons, and, you know, some of us our age like the protest music of Woody Guthrie or John Prine, and we play that, and then we play the old-time fiddle tunes and the bluegrass, so it all kind of fits together. And over 8 years, we've become very close to each other, and we've lost members of the circle. We have grieved over those that graduate and move on, and again brought others in. But it's this common thread of interest in the music, interested in the heritage and the tradition of this music that's brought us all together. That's just really special.
Wake Forest University Dean of Admissions Martha Allman, the Wake alumna and auto harp player, along with her family, will join their friends in the Unbroken Circle on Saturday night, February 1st at 7 o'clock. They'll offer a free concert at Kolenich Auditorium in the Byram Welcome Center on the Wake campus in Winston-Salem. Donations will be collected for the Shalom Project, a nonprofit charity organization that tutors at-risk children and feeds, clothes, and cares for those in need. We've been sampling from last year's Unbroken Circle performance live at Green Street Church in Winston-Salem. You'll find links to more information at WFDD.org and click on Triad Arts Weekend. And after an entire show of great music today going on in Winston-Salem, it's time for a shift to cinema and a recent conversation I had with a Winston native who's just bound and determined to keep one of life's simple pleasures alive and well and thriving right in the heart of her hometown's downtown. There's lots new going on at Aperture Cinema in downtown Winston-Salem. Owner Lauren Desai dropped by recently to chat about it. That must be kind of fun coming up with series ideas. I mean, you've got a new one with night shifts.
Yeah, so I think sort of the mission of an art house cinema is not just to show these new releases, but to sort of get into the repertory titles and bring back films that people might have missed or that are just fun sort of cult films. So Night Shift is our way to bring back sort of the fun cult camp films. And then we're mixing in some new releases into that as well, some more like horror genre films.
American Werewolf in London, that would be one, I imagine.
So yeah, so it's great because people are suggesting titles and we, you know, we have to sort of build the audience for this. Attendance sort of is hit or miss depending on the title, and we're sort of just having to grow awareness because people aren't used to the idea of going to see an older movie that they could get on Netflix or on demand. So we're really trying to encourage this sort of sense of community and coming to see it and getting a group together. And
there's nothing like that. I was just talking with my wife about this recently, but we went to see, Philomena. We were in Asheville that time. Don't hurt me.
Did you see that Fine Arts Theater?
Yeah, Fine Arts, yeah. Down on Eagle. And we loved it, and we shared the experience with 50 or 60 strangers. How do you describe that sort of thing? Where else can you get it?
You can't really. I mean, you can get it in theater. You can't get any other experience where the lights are off and you turn off your phone, hopefully, and you are not distracted by anything, and you really can lose yourself in the story. And that's what, you know, all of us in the art house cinema world, we're trying to save that sort of feeling.
Yeah. Well, hats off to you because you're doing a great job of it. So Night Shift continues. I'm looking down the list of great classics in that genre screened at Night Shift. Shaun of the Dead on the schedule.
So Night Shift's every 2 weeks, and that one happens to fall on Valentine's Day. So in keeping with our theme for Night Shift, we wanted to pick something that worked. And Shaun of the Dead, though it's about zombies, is also sort of a romantic comedy. So we thought that might be sort of a fun alternative to the standard rom-com.
So, what's the plan?
Right. We take Pete's car, we drive over to Mum's, we go in, take care of Philip.
I'm so sorry, Philip.
Then we grab Mum, we go over to Liz's place, pull up, have a cup of tea, and wait for all this to blow over.
Why have we got to go to Liz's?
Because we do.
She dumped you.
I have to know if she's all right.
Why?
Because I love her.
All right. I'm not staying there, though.
Why not?
If we hole up, I want to be somewhere familiar, I want to know where the exits are, and I want to be allowed to smoke.
In addition to Night Shifts, another series coming up. But tell me about Screen Club.
So this is now our fifth year. And leading up to our fifth anniversary next January, we really wanted to celebrate, but do it in a different way and bring other members of the community in. So we thought about sort of an art poster series. And so back in the fall, I reached out to 30-plus artists and asked if they'd be interested in picking a film that was important to them or that was their favorite film and designing a poster around the film. And then we're going to screen the film and offer a limited number of those prints that they've designed available.
And what a great way to integrate the visual art with the film experience and some local connections as well. I'm recognizing some of these names here. Won't mention them, but lots of folks that I'm sure plenty of listeners will be familiar with.
Yeah, it's in some fun films like The Sound of Music, and the series will start off in February with Groundhog Day, which is fitting for February. And
perfect.
Groundhog Day! Get up!
Morning! See the groundhog?
Yeah.
I think it'll be an early spring.
Didn't we do this yesterday?
I don't know what you mean.
Don't mess with me, pork chop. What day is this?
It's February 2nd. Groundhog Day.
Yeah. You know, I thought it was yesterday.
Oh.
You got some screenings of Oscar shorts.
Yeah, so this is our... We've done this since we opened. This will be the fifth year. Every year there's a program for all the live action, animated, and documentary shorts. And this year, now that we have another screen, we'll be running them for 2 weeks, which hopefully will give people enough time to come and see them.
Great. You can see all these before the Oscars, then you're doing a live event?
Yes. We've shown the Oscars for the past 2 years. We'll do that again.
Yeah. And the shorts is great. I remember stumbling across a matinee screening of these, the animated shorts, all, you know, back to back, getting a chance to see 7 or 8 just wonderful animated films, all the nominees before they hit the Oscar ceremony, which is a real treat.
Yeah. I mean, it's really great because there's a lot of demand or interest in short films and not a lot of opportunity to see them. And these are the best ones. These are the ones that were nominated for an Oscar. So they're really quality shorts. And it's great that they've been able to put together this program and travel it around to art house theaters.
Let me get to the point. It's taken some time to find a replacement psychiatrist. What with this ever-expanding war in the East, experienced doctors are being snapped up by the military. Prisons are low priorities in times of war, except if we're housing extremists.
Governor, the point?
The point is the Vorman problem.
Vorman is a prisoner here.
Vorman is a prisoner who maintains he is a god.
Would you mind telling me how long you have believed yourself to be a god?
I may ask you the same question.
Looking ahead at the Oscars, any films this year that you feel like are strong contenders?
This year is going to be a really, I think, a fun year because there's not one film that's dominated the conversation. And so I think that's exciting. And hopefully it'll stay that way by the time Oscars roll around in March, that when they open the envelope, you really won't know. But I mean, I still think 12 Years a Slave deserves some awards. I think Nebraska was great, and Bruce Dern might deserve the Oscar for his performance and all of his, you know, they always like to reward people that have been around for a while.
How did you and Mom end up getting married?
She wanted to.
You didn't?
I figured what the hell.
Were you ever sorry you married her?
All the time. Could have been worse.
Well, you must have been in love, at least at first.
Never came up.
Aperture Cinema owner Lauren Desai. Aperture is an independent, locally owned movie theater in the heart of downtown Winston-Salem, where they screen a unique mix of independent, foreign, documentary, local, and festival films now in three theaters, two 80-seaters, and a newly opened 45-seat screening room. You'll find screenings there 7 days a week with additional matinees on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. They'll be screening the Oscars in March, and you'll find the complete calendar at WFDD.org. Well, that's all for today's show. Triad Arts Weekend's technical producer is Eddie Garcia. Our associate producer is Bethany Chafin. And we'd love to hear from you. If you've got questions, comments, or suggestions, please send your email to triadarts@wfu.edu. You'll find podcasts of this show along with archived episodes on our website, wfdd.org, and click on Triad Arts Weekend. I'm David Ford. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.